Hello, I'm ISS Special Counsel Pat McGurn, and welcome to the latest installment of the 2020 ISS Bulletin podcast series. Health concerns related to the coronavirus pandemic have resulted in most U.S. shareholder meetings taking place solely in cyberspace this year, so today we'll go boldly where no Bulletin podcast has gone before and take a voyage through some of the 2020 season's top trends and most anticipated virtual-only meetings. Joining me to explore this year's AGM universe are a duo of proxy season veterans, U.S. Research Head Mark Goldstein and Rachel Hedrick, a senior member of our U.S. Compensation Research Team. Welcome, Mark. Let's start with a countdown of the U.S. season's expected peak days and weeks over the course of the next month. I think what launch date should be circled on proxy voters' calendars?
Well, Pat, to continue the theme, the season's liftoff begins in the last 2 weeks of April and accelerates through the first 3 weeks of May. Daily AGM volumes will reach maximum velocity just prior to splashdown on the U.S. Memorial Day holiday weekend, which typically marks the unofficial end of peak season. AGM volumes will be especially heavy during the weeks of May 11th and May 18th, with the Tuesday through Thursday periods of each of those weeks hosting more than 100 annual meetings per day. Peak season will end with a big bang as May 20th and 21st appear to be the busiest days of the 2020 season, with more than 250 meetings, including more than 50 at S&P 500 firms, spread across those 2 days.
Wow, that's heavy load. Let's start with the election of directors. What trends are you tracking so far for 2020?
Well, the boardroom scene is very quiet so far in 2020 as activist shareholders have dropped most of their high-profile challenges to incumbent directors. Starboard Value, for example, just pulled its nominees at eBay. Other recent settlements ended anticipated proxy contests at HP, Harley-Davidson, Stericycle, and Blum & Brands. Vote No campaigns are also few and far between, although both Uber Technologies and JP Morgan Chase are facing opposition to individual directors. That's John Thain and Lee Raymond, respectively. Some activists are trying to show that they can do the right thing. Engaged Capital announced on April 17th that its partners will forego all remaining fees to be received from the public companies where they serve on the board, including the Hain Celestial Group, Rent-A-Center, SunOpta, and TiVo. Engaged has requested that each company pool the capital and provide it directly to employees who are most in need. Most nominees running unopposed appear to be receiving high levels of support to date. Based on meeting results in the ISS Voting Analytics database, only two nominees out of more than 1,325 candidates on Russell 3000 company boards have failed to receive majority support so far in 2020. They are Twist Biosciences' Keith Crandall and Ingalls Markets' Ernest E. Ferguson. Average support for all R3K nominees is 95.7% of the votes cast. Plain vanilla concerns, such as poor attendance or a lack of board accountability, drove the two submajority results and most of the other low support levels registered to date. While two of 2019's breakout drivers of negative votes, overboarding and the lack of gender diversity, appear to be pulling some nominees' support levels down, these concerns haven't tipped the balance yet this year. It appears that some investors may be giving directors the benefit of the doubt this year. Notably, both submajority votes occurred in February before the coronavirus pandemic exploded in the U.S.
Yeah, it really does sound quiet on the boardroom front. Let's see if it stays that way. I think moving down ballot, what are the leading topics for governance-related shareholder proposals this season?
Well, core shareholder rights issues have made a comeback of sorts this spring, as proposals related to written consent solicitations top the list of governance-related shareholder proposals on corporate ballots through the end of May. 2019's most prevalent governance shareholder proposal, asking boards to name independent directors as board chair, has slipped to second place this year. Close on its heels in third place are resolutions making it easier for investors to call special meetings. Meanwhile, a new proposal from John Chevedden's now grounded crew of gadflies, asking boards to allow advisory shareholder votes on any bylaw changes adopted by directors, is the season's fourth most frequently seen governance topic on ballots. As I will discuss later, it hasn't proven to be very popular with proxy voters so far. Rounding out the top five is another perennial shareholder rights concern, resolutions asking boards to eliminate supermajority vote requirements. The topic would have been higher on the list if not for 10 successful SEC no action requests, which led to the omission of proposals.
Any idea about why the jump in written consent and special meeting proposals, Mark?
Well, with governance shareholder proposals, it comes down to supply and demand. Some reforms, such as annual board elections or providing access to the proxy for shareholders' board nominees using majority voting in uncontested elections, are now close to universal practice at large cap companies in the S&P 500. And many of the companies that haven't adopted these practices have tried to do so, only to be thwarted by the supermajority vote requirements for the necessary charter amendments. Written consent and special meeting rights, however, are far less widespread. Roughly 70% of S&P 500 firms, for example, offer no meaningful right to conduct consent solicitations. Likewise, more than three quarters of S&P 500 firms make it difficult by setting a demand requirement at 20% or higher, or even impossible for shareholders to call special meetings. To fill this vacuum, proponents have put forth close to 50 proposals aimed at boosting shareholder rights to act in lieu of meetings via written consent for consideration in meetings through the end of May. The 45% average vote support for the three AGM results in hand at this point may indicate rising shareholder support for these resolutions during a season when most meetings are virtual only, and some unilateral boardroom emergency actions have been greenlighted by the stock markets. These early results include a majority vote for Chevedden ally Myra Young's proposal at Berry Global Group, where 54.6% of the votes cast backed her proposal despite board opposition. Some notable May meetings with written consent proposals on the ballot include HP on the 12th, NASDAQ on the 19th, and PayPal Holdings on the 21st. Special meeting proposals also continue their resurgence. 32 proposals asking boards to make it easier for shareholders to call special meetings will appear on ballots for meetings through the end of May. This includes resolutions on ballots at Verizon on May 7th, McDonald's on May 21st, and Amazon.com on May 27th. As with written consent, shareholders may be looking at special meeting rights with renewed interest given the current market uncertainties. Average support for the first three resolutions at meetings this year is a little over 50%, although that's fueled by a 70% plus tally in favor of a rare management-backed shareholder proposal at Sonoco Products. Past strong support for these proposals will cause a steady stream of management proposals asking shareholders to enhance such rights on 2020 ballots. So far, there are 10 management-sponsored proposals seeking to boost shareholders' right to call a special meeting, and 7 proposals asking to expand written consent rights on ballots. Notably, both types of proposals appear on ballots for JELD-WEN Holdings' May 7th meeting and JetBlue Airways' May 14th meeting.
Interesting, I think. So are calls for independent board chairs actually in decline?
Yeah, the number of independent chair proposals is slightly down year over year. ISS has tracked close to 40 submissions of independent chair proposals for consideration this season, compared to 67 in 2019, although we don't have full year results yet for 2020. To date, just 3 resolutions have been omitted by companies after the SEC staff greenlighted the requests for no action relief. Only one IC proposal has been withdrawn, although that board appears to have a proposal asking for leadership change on its ballot anyway. That leaves 34 independent chair proposals yet to be voted before the end of May, including a trio of high-profile resolutions on May 27th at Chevron, ExxonMobil, and Facebook. 2 resolutions have been voted on to date, with average support from just over 40% of the votes cast. Neither have received majority support.
Okay, Mark, now what's the backstory on the new advisory vote on board-adopted bylaw proposals?
Well, John Chevedden and his cohorts added several new arrows to their quivers this season. The most prominent of those is a non-binding proposal asking boards to amend corporate bylaws to require that any bylaw amendment adopted by the directors without shareholder ratification must be subject to an advisory shareholder vote. Chevedden and Kenneth Steiner targeted more than 15 companies with such proposals this season. Now, while this new proposal aspires to tap into rising shareholder anger over unilateral bylaw adoptions by boards, the broad language of the proposal, which requires advisory votes on any bylaw passed by the directors, appears to have limited its initial appeal with institutional investors. The first three arrows missed the bullseye by a good distance, with average support of just 2.4% of the votes cast. Only one of them, a 3.8% tally at Goodyear Tire, managed to clear the SEC's resubmission threshold. A dozen more of these proposals are on ballots through the end of May, including Wells Fargo on April 28th, Cummins on May 12th, and JetBlue on May 14th. Chevedden and Steiner will undoubtedly look at the results from this season's campaign and tweak the proposal and its targeting for future meetings. In fact, some proposals we've seen recently have limited the scope to so-called material bylaw amendments, implicitly carving out purely administrative changes. Notably, none of these vote on bylaw proposals were successfully challenged on substantive grounds by boards seeking no action relief at the SEC. Another perennial topic favored by Chevedden and his allies, calls for companies to restore simple majority voting, ran into a buzzsaw at the SEC this season. Roughly half of the shareholder proposals on the topic were nixed after the SEC staff greenlighted no action relief. That leaves just 10 shareholder proposals on ballots at meetings through the end of May, including Duke Energy on May 7th, Marriott International on May 8th, and Fitbit on May 21st. While shareholder proposals are fewer in number this year, there is a traffic jam of management proposals on ballots this spring aimed at removing supermajority vote requirements from company governing documents. 56 proposals seeking to reduce or eliminate supermajority vote provisions are spread across ballots at 38 companies this spring, including a trio of resolutions on the ballot at Moody's April 21st AGM and a quartet of them at Skyworks Solutions' May 6th meeting.
Okay, Mark, now you talked about the advisory vote on board-adopted bylaw proposals earlier, but should shareholders be on the lookout for other new or novel proposal topics in 2020?
Yes, one new high-profile proposal riffs on the Business Roundtable's August 2019 reformulation of its statement on the purpose of a corporation. This document, which was signed by 181 CEOs, commits signatories to lead their companies for the benefit of all stakeholders, including customers, employees, suppliers, communities, and of course, shareholders. A new proposal sponsored by Harrington Investments targets the home company boards of several prominent CEOs who inked their names on the BRT statement. Specifically, it asks these boards to review their company's governing documents and make recommendations on specifically how the purpose of a corporation can be fully implemented by the board and management. The resolution is on ballots for meetings of three big banks in April, Citigroup on the 21st, Bank of America on the 22nd, and Goldman Sachs Group on the 30th, and also on the ballot for BlackRock on May 21st.
Okay, we've talked about what's hot, but what's not? What issues have fallen short of expectations so far in 2020?
Well, requests for board declassification are up this year, thanks to a campaign by Herbert Denton's ProCap NYC. They look to pick up where Lucian Bebchuk's shareholder rights project left off back in 2014 in its multi-season quest to eliminate staggered board terms. But although 17 declassified proposals were filed, eight of them were excluded, mostly due to late filings by ProCap. Six have been withdrawn, so only three such proposals remain pending for spring meetings at this point. The lone D-class proposal, shareholder proposal that is, to have already reached a vote this year, was sponsored not by Denton, but by Mario Gabelli's Gamco Asset Management. The non-binding resolution drew support from an eye-popping 73.2% of the votes cast, representing 58% of outstanding voting power at National Fuel Gas, and that's despite opposition to Gamco's proposal from the company's board. Despite the dearth of shareholder proposals on ballots, Denton's annual elections campaign may already be making a big impact. There are close to 40 proposals on the management side of ballots so far this season, seeking shareholder support to repeal classified boards. That's including 10 in the second half of April and more than 20 in May.
Great, Mark. We've spent a lot of time so far talking about governance proposals, but what about resolutions related to environmental and social concerns?
Well, in advance of the proxy season, submissions of ENS proposals far outnumbered their governance cousins. Withdrawals following settlements and exclusions driven by SEC no action relief have winnowed down the total number of ENS proposals on ballots for meetings through the end of May to roughly 100. In fact, only a handful of ENS topics will account for 10 or more proposals on ballots at meetings through the end of May. It should come as no surprise amid the US presidential election campaign that proposals regarding disclosure of political spending and lobbying activities top the list of ENS proposals on ballots. Lobbying disclosure proposals are the most prevalent of these, thanks to limited exclusions and few settlements. Roughly 20 lobbying proposals are scheduled for votes through the end of May. Three early season results drew average support of more than 30% of votes cast, with a high watermark of 42.8% at Maximus. Some upcoming meetings to watch include Boeing on April 27th and Ford Motor and United Parcel Service, UPS, on May 14th. Political spending proposals also continue to be popular with proponents, with 16 resolutions set for votes through the end of May, including meetings at Home Depot on May 21st and ExxonMobil on May 27th. Human capital-related proposals have been in the ascendancy in recent seasons, and 2020 is no exception. 14 resolutions related to human capital issues, including 8 proposals addressing the gender and/or the racial pay gap, will show up on ballots through the end of May. 2 pay gap proposal results in hand indicate moderate levels of support. Amazon.com and Facebook's meetings, both on May 27th, offer the highest profile proposals on that topic. Another human capital-related proposal that we should mention involves putting employee representatives on boards of directors. We've seen that at several companies already this year, but I don't believe we have vote results yet at this time. While climate change risk-related proposals top the list of ENS submissions, nearly 20 withdrawals and 10 omissions will make the topic scarce on ballots this spring. Only a dozen resolutions appear in the meeting queue through the end of May. Given the high rate of withdrawals and exclusions in the energy sectors, many of the surviving proposals take aim at firms in the transportation sector, including the May 14th meetings at Union Pacific and UPS, and at banks, including a pair of climate risk-related proposals on the ballot for JPMorgan Chase's May 19th meeting. Hybrid proposals asking for reports on climate-related lobbying activities are slated for votes at United Airlines on May 20th and Chevron on May 27th. 7 exclusions and 4 withdrawals on human rights-related proposals leave just 9 of those on ballots at meetings through the end of May, including PayPal on May 21st and Chevron and Facebook on May 27th.
Thanks, Mark. And now let's move to Rachel Hedrick for a look at U.S. compensation trends. Rachel, what are SNAP pay support levels so far this year in 2020?
Thanks, Pat. So when compared to a similar point in April last year, support levels for SNAP pay so far in 2020 have been equally high. Average support for the advisory proposals at Russell 3000 companies to date is 91.2% of the votes cast, based on just over 170 disclosed vote results. And so far in 2020, only 3 companies in the Russell 3000, including 2 large caps, have failed to receive majority support from their shareholders.
Can you share some details about the companies that have failed so far?
Sure. So at Qualcomm, investors voted down the say-on-pay proposal after the company made sizable, fully vested equity awards to executives following the settlement of a license and supply agreement with Apple. And while the company's stock price was very positively affected by the settlement of this issue, it represented the 2nd consecutive year in which the CEO of Qualcomm had received a special grant. And so the say-on-pay proposal received the lowest support level seen thus far in 2020 at just under 18%. Equity awards were also in the spotlight at IQVIA Holdings, as the CEO's grant value there climbed up to $15 million in a mix of stock appreciation rights and performance shares. And for comparison's sake, the median CEO in the S&P makes about $12.5 million in total compensation. So when grant values increase substantially like this, we generally expect disclosure on the part of the board regarding the rationale for such large growth and pay opportunity. And compounding the issue, IQVIA, the board's lack of transparency extends to its bonus determinations, which were also largely discretionary. And the CEO there received a near maximum award under that program as well. So this proposal received just over 46% earlier in April. And lastly, the board at Acuity Brands amended the severance arrangements with both the CEO and CFO to allow each of them to resign because of the company's insolvency or potential bankruptcy and receive full severance. This type of arrangement is generally viewed as problematic as it allows for executives to resign upon an event which may indicate a performance failure on the part of management or the board. And in addition, the company also enhanced the retirement benefits for these two executives under the company SERP in the same year. So this meeting, which what seems like a lifetime ago in January, the proposal there got just 33% support. Outside of these failures, though, just 8 other companies so far, including at the Walt Disney meeting earlier in March, have received relatively low support, which we define as support from shareholders of less than 70% of the votes cast.
Interesting. Now, let's broaden the lens a little bit and take a look. Are there any prevailing trends so far that are notable for the U.S. pay market in 2020?
Well, so far, there have been 2 consistent themes that we've seen in proxy season, one backward-looking and one forward-looking. So first, the payment of severance upon voluntary terminations or some type of severance enhancements beyond what was initially provided for in an employment agreement or in the company's severance plans continues to be an area of focus. We've continued to hear that investors believe that severance is inappropriate for voluntary terminations, and that clear disclosure of the true nature of a termination is really important in assessing the appropriateness of any severance payments that are made. The second issue is forcing investors to look ahead to the 2021 proxy season. We're currently seeing a significant number of companies disclosing forward-looking changes, either to pay levels or their compensation programs or some combination, related to uncertainties caused by the coronavirus pandemic. And while we're noting some of these changes in our 2020 reports, we'll be looking much more closely at these boardroom decisions next year in the context of full year performance and pay outcomes.
Great, thanks. Looking a little less further into the distance, I think, what are some upcoming high profile meetings with pay related issues likely to show up on the ballot, I think?
Sure, so let's start with Uber Technologies, which is hosting its first annual shareholder meeting since the company's May 2019 initial public offering. The CTW Investment Group has initiated a Say Nay on Pay campaign against the Say on Pay proposal this year, citing concerns regarding the CEO's new hire awards. So the CEO of Uber, Dara Khosrowshahi, received consecutive $27 million restricted stock awards, each of which vests after just 12 months. And CTW also points to a pre-IPO option grant that he was awarded, valued at approximately $46 million, which brings his total new hire-related compensation to around $100 million. One interesting footnote for this meeting, the CEO's travel for 2019 in Uber-related vehicles totaled $1.4 million. Uber's first AGM will be held on May 11th. And also on tap in early May is the annual meeting at General Electric. After consecutive CEO changes at the company, the leadership situation at GE has stabilized, and investors are now able to assess the regular cycle incentive programs. Unfortunately, GE's new bonus program relies really heavily on compensation committee discretion, and it allows the committee to determine payouts based largely on individual performance. And this is unusual for large cap companies, most of which by now rely on preset transparent performance criteria in order to determine incentive award payouts. Based on the committee's discretionary assessment of performance for 2019, the CEO of GE received a $5.5 million bonus, despite financial performance that was generally lower than last year. And shareholders will get a chance to vote on this proposal at GE's annual meeting, which is on May 5th.
Great. Thanks, Rachel. And also thanks to Mark. But that is all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank all of you out in cyberspace for taking time to listen to today's podcast. And you should keep an eye out for notifications of upcoming podcast episodes in this series. Until next time, stay safe and goodbye.